produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 436. The Red Planet. Lee Pomeroy talks about his part in Rick Wakeman's new album.
Hi, this is Billy Sherwood of Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
This is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Hi, this is Jeff Dales, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Hi, this is Steve Howe, and you're listening to me on the Yes Music Podcast. Have a good time. Listen. Bye.
Hi, this is John Anderson. You're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Hi, this is Rick Wakeman of ARW, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Well, it's a welcome return after, we think, a couple of years for Lee Pomeroy, who's come to talk to us about the Red Planet and the English Rock Ensemble. So, welcome, Lee.
Ah, oh, thanks, Kevin. Hello, Kevin. Hello, Mark. Nice to hear from you.
Great to hear from you. So there seems to be a lot of excitement around this album. Do you feel that this album is a return to form for Rick?
Yeah, I think so. When Rick first sort of discussed the album, which was maybe sort of back end of last year, and I said to him, "You know, well, what sort of album is it?" And he just said, "Prog." Said, "Oh, right," he said. "Yeah, like full on prog." He said, "All instrumental." He said, "Think, you know, just think about some of the early stuff." He said, "I'm kind of aiming at that sort of direction." So, and I thought, "Oh, it's great," because I love Six Wives. That's my favourite album that Rick ever did. Because I used to look at the cover and read the cover, you know, and read all the gear and all, look at all the kind of equipment he had and stuff. So I thought, oh man, if he's going back sort of to that sort of sound, then I'm in. And he really has. He's using Hammond organ and he's using lots of Mellotron. Yeah. So it's you know, he's doing all the things that will put a smile on the faces of people like me.
Yeah.
Basically.
But what I was wondering was, I took a listen to the last English Rock Ensemble album out there from 2003. How does it compare with that? I mean, one obvious thing is that this is an instrumental and that one had vocals on it.
Yeah, I mean, they've both got that space concept, of course. In some ways, I think they're similar because of that kind of overarching thing of sort of space exploration. But obviously, that there are no instrumental tracks on that album at all. And so, you know, you've got less of the solo explorations that are on the Red Planet. So
yeah.
Rick's kind of taking solos every tune. Also, I think with Out There, because you're writing for you're writing for a singer to sing.
Yeah.
I guess you have to be a little more careful with what you write, because some things are going to be just far too tricky to sing.
Yeah.
With an instrumental album, you can do what the hell you like. You can make it as you know, complex, or you know, you can do whatever you want to do. So
yeah,
like there's one track which is the last track, which is called Valles Marineris.
Yeah.
And the intro riff that kind of builds up over this military snare drum is in a group of 5, 6, and then 7, 8. So you've got this kind of nice riff, and then I kind of start following it on the bass and building a riff up over the top of it, you know, so you can kind of maybe explore a few more areas like that without having to think, oh, how's the poor guy going to sing on this, you know? So I think it's got similarities, you know, certainly, because like Rick's definitely going for that sort of, once again, well, Rick always goes for that expansive theme. That's why I love his stuff so much. But he can just really turn up the steam on the instrumentals and get the players to really play out on this one. Which, you know, Dave Colquhoun's guitar playing is ridiculous on this album, and the sound is incredible. Ash Sohn, the drummer, I mean, Ash is an absolute legend anyway. And I had a great time too. You know, I was able to just get all of my guitars out, because we kind of recorded this at the start of lockdown, really. So I'm in my little isolation inspiration station, to quote Bob Mortimer, the English comedian, and I've got all my guitars around me. So I've got, you know, 3 Fender Jazzies, a Fender Precision, a Rickenbacker, pre-Ernie Ball Music Man Stingray, a 5-string Stingray, got a Chapman stick.
Yeah.
I've got my Taurus pedals are here. I've got everything with me. So I just got it all out and just thought, right, and just lined them all up and said, okay, what do I want to play on this one? So there's five different basses on eight tracks on this, because I thought, oh, good.
Yeah.
Great, yeah. There's even a bit of fretless, in fact, on that last track.
Yeah.
Valles Marineris. And also a guest appearance from my son playing bass pedals on Valles Marineris. And he's credited on the record. So he's 17. So that really made his 17th wow. birthday.
Yeah, I bet it did.
Yeah, so originally my question was going to be what the inspiration was for this record. Now, obviously it's Mars, obviously, since it's the red planet. But what I was more curious about was, is Rick one of these followers like me of these NASA channels where they show all these live feeds from the Mars rover and stuff like that? Is that what the inspiration was for this record?
I mean, Rick would probably be able to shed a bit more light on that, but Rick's always had a really keen interest in space, and he knows a lot about it as well. He knows a lot about the subject. And also, a good friend of Rick is Brian May.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
And so they kind of chat, and, you know, Rick's always had a keen interest in that, in the subjects of space and exploration of space, etc. I mean, going back right to the 70s since... what's the album called? Noah for Connection.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, that's it. So, you know, he's always been interested in it. And the album that we did in 2003, that had a space theme. So he's always kind of got an ear to that. And I guess that subject matter allows you to be as big as you want, you know, because if you're writing about the infinite, the infinity of space, then you can make a song as grandiose as you want to.
Obviously, with that in mind, and with his vast knowledge of space, you know, he could have thought of, you know, Saturn or Jupiter. That's why I was kind of always curious about if the whole Mars rover, you know, thing was kind of the thing that made him inspired to, because there is quite a lot of it out there to see.
There is, but I think also it's the idea that, you know, if you listen to any scientists when they talk about Mars, you know, they're saying that that's the place we could go to next. First, via the moon, obviously, because it's back to the moon first and then on to Mars. So with Saturn, with Jupiter, you can't land on them because they're gas giants. You'd just be immediately crushed, you know. But because Mars is smaller than the Earth, so I think it's got a less gravitational pull than the Earth. It's kind of, it's more habitable potentially for humans to land on.
Yeah.
You can't go to Venus because it's far too hot. Mercury is boiling hot on one side and freezing cold on the other, so you can't go there. Yeah. So the only one is Mars, and I guess that idea of humans looking toward Mars in the future, if we manage to completely knacker this planet, which we're doing a fine job of so far, you know, then Mars is the next place we're going to go to. So I suppose it's always the obvious choice, really, to write about. But I think also because we know more about it than all the other planets.
Yeah. Tying in with the space theme, there was supposed to be a playback of the new album at the National Space Centre, not far from me in Leicester. That's a great shame that had to be cancelled.
Real, real shame. I was going to go. I think Ash was going to go and Dave Cahoon was going to go. I think we were all going to show up, and I was really looking forward to it because I've never been there. I've never been to that. What's it called again? It's called
National Space Centre.
That's it. I've never been to the National Space Centre, which is shocking, really. I should go, but that was my excuse. I thought, fantastic, I'm actually going to get to see it.
Yeah.
And I feel for Rick too, because I think that the album would have come out earlier, but obviously, you know, timing, lockdown, etc., has kind of halted everything. So Rick was really looking forward to doing a big launch of this album, you know, plenty of press, and really sort of getting people interested and vibed up about it. But it's just come to a dead stop.
Yeah.
However, it's still a great album. And at the end of the day, if the music kind of isn't good enough, then no matter what kind of press you do, if you're getting bad reviews because the music isn't great, then it doesn't matter. But this is a real cracking album. It really hits you right between the eyes, this one.
Which of these songs did you feel was the most challenging for you to play?
There were a few, actually. One of the ones that was a challenge in terms of just working out a riff was the last track, Valles Marineris, because of that intro rhythm being in 5-4, 6-4 and 7-4. And it had a very distinct rhythm between those three bars on this snare drum. And so that was trying to work out something that went that played along exactly with that rhythm, but also kind of played underneath the chords that Rick was playing over the top, because Rick's playing kind of chords that change in different places, not necessarily to the 5, 6, and 7.
Right.
So I was trying to work out a riff that would fit with both Rick's chords and would go along with this snare drum pattern. So that was kind of the, that was my most head scratching one. there was another riff on a track called, I think it's Tharsis Tholus, yeah, where it's this really fast little and it's a kind of really weird little timing, the way it occurs in the middle of a bar. And sometimes you'll play it 3 or 4 times through, sometimes you'll play it once or twice, and then at the end of the song it starts to move in key. So you're trying to play this little riff that's in a really strange little timing and get it really nice and tight, and then move it around the neck as well. So that was a particularly head-scratching bit. So I would say Valles Marineris probably. My favourite, if I've got, I don't know if you were going to sort of cue that one up next, but my favourite track is a track called Arcea Mons, which is kind of it's quite a groovy little tune, actually.
And I had
fun playing on all of it, but that track in particular, I think you can hear me smiling on it.
Well, I mean, we've heard just a couple of extracts, so you've already mentioned, I think, the two that we've heard on the little interviews series that Rick's done. So Tharsis Tholus, and that's got an amazing Mini Moog. I'm assuming it's Mini Moog's solo. And the ones that you just meant, I can't pronounce it, Arisa Mons or whatever it is.
Valles Marineris and Arcea Mons.
Ah, right. And that's a real, as you say, high-octane romp from the little bit that we've heard. But it's also got a lovely interlude on acoustic guitar. So
that's right.
Do you think that kind of variety and contrast is important in a prog album?
Well, I think, you know, the key thing with the word prog is that it's a shortening of progressive, isn't it? So I think it's the idea that being progressive means you can, you know, all bets are on. You know, you can go anywhere you like. You can say, right, well, this is the brass band section. And then this goes into the mariachi section, and then out into the jazz swing bit. And you can do all that stuff because no one's telling you that you can't, you know. And I think... Yeah. Also, if Rick, like most of us, you know, we all have different tastes in music. So, you know, if you were to do an album all in one style, you might not be as interested by it as if you think to yourself, well, you know, I really love rock music, but also like listening to Chopin. So, you know, I'm going to put a lovely piano interlude in one of these songs. And I think Rick's got so many interests in different types of music, and of course grew up playing soul music and the pop covers of the day when he was sort of a young guy. There's a lot of music in Rick. There's so much. So, you know, so I think he just can't help himself but want to explore all of those avenues, sometimes within one piece of music, in the same way that dear Steve Hackett, who, I've played for and love Steve dearly, he's the same. He has this kind of curiosity about all different types of music, and he wants to explore them all. And I'm all for that. I'm all for art for art's sake.
So I'm a big fan and follower of Rick Wakeman's, obviously. When he started these videos for The Red Planet, I was hoping for several making of videos, and so far only you and Dave have provided some insight with that. Now, do you know if there will be any videos in the future about, you know, the drumming from Ash, or even if Rick himself will be doing any videos with him doing the recording of the keyboards?
I mean, I think there will be, and I also think that there's due potentially a DVD at some point, perhaps, or with extra stuff talking about the making of with Rick. I'm not sure about Ash. Ash is such an incredibly busy guy, because Ash is like one of the top session drummers, well, certainly in the UK, but, you know, he's really well known around the world. So he's constantly busy. He records a lot with Trevor Horn, and he's recorded for Adele and, you know, Ed Sheeran and all sorts of people. So I'm not sure about Ash, but I think Rick will definitely be doing or maybe even have done more stuff. And I think that as and when, you know, everything is in a position to start moving again, you might see a bit more of that. And, you know, potentially there might be a DVD or an extra type of thing being released to, that's got more in-depth interviews with everything, you see.
Yeah, I know that you recorded these songs in isolation at home. Now, for us gear nerds at home, what did you use for this recording? Did you go kind of DI and then use plugins, or did you use some sort of an amp modeler like a Kemper?
Both, actually. So I've got a Kemper. I've got two, in fact, that that I bought when I was doing the Yes ARW tours. And so I set the Kemper quite often to my Yes setting and would record with that. On a track like Arcia Mons, I didn't do that. I actually went directly into my UAD Apollo for a different type of sound. I wanted a more kind of DI'd sound for that particular track. There was also some recording at Dave Colquhoun's studio, this again before lockdown. Just before lockdown, I went over to his studio and he had a lovely old vintage Park amp, which is was made by the guys who were in Marshall. Right. And then kind of a couple of the guys broke away in the sort of late 60s, early 70s and made these Park amps, and they're fantastic. And I took a cab there and we mic'd my amp up through this Park amp and with my bass speaker. So there were three different ways of recording depending on the track. I would sort of think to myself, oh, this might be nice if we had a real amp, you know. Or, you know, at the time lockdown came, I thought, okay, I can't go to Dave's now. I have to do it all here. So for a while, the plan was to go to Dave's and record it all there. But we did some recording together, which was great fun because then you can play around with the track. You can both kind of riff on ideas or come up with a little riff you could play together, or, you know, if he's got an arpeggio that's going down, I might play something that goes up to kind of get that opposing motion type of thing. So we did a little bit of that. But once lockdown hit, then I just came back home and came into my little room and recorded it all here. Yeah, so that's how it was done. Combination of mic'd up amp, Kemper, and also a couple of tracks DI'd into my Apollo, UAD Apollo.
Wonderful stuff. Okay, so you've already said then you've been working out riffs and so on, but how much did you actually end up adding to the songs musically, and how were they presented to you? Did you just have all of Rick's parts already written and you added to them, or what happened?
I mean, Rick, he would send, the first thing he would send was just audio, and Ash was the first to record. So Ash did all his drums first, which is great because for a bass player, you want to be playing to the actual drummer, you know, not to a click, because the drummer can kind of speed up and slow down. Even though there's a click, they can kind of manipulate time with it just to kind of give something a bit more edge or make it feel a bit laid back. So the drums were done first, and a lot of Rick's guide keyboards were done first. Once Ash had done his, then I would get the files and I would start to put the bass down. Now, Rick would also produce like scores for it, for all the stuff. I'm not a very, very good reader of music. I'm very slow. Yeah. And so I almost would say that I don't really read music. So, but I can, if, because Rick sent the scores over, sometimes if there was a bit that was a bit tricky, I could look down his score, his piano score, and find the bass clef and just kind of work things out from that. So that was handy. So there were certain riffs that we had to play together, and you'll hear those on the album. But there were other times, and a lot of other times, where Rick said, it's up to you, come up with something, see what you want to do.
Yes.
So it's brilliant because, you know, you get to explore and have some fun with the tracks too. So you feel like you've got more invested in the track yourself too, because, you know, you put your own stamp on it. So Dave too, as well, Dave Colquhoun, you know, he came up with all sorts of little guitar ideas and guitar riff things. There's on one track, he's got this fantastic echo guitar part going on that, you know, and it sounds amazing. It just lifts the track up to another level entirely. So, however, you know, the chords, obviously, you've got to kind of go with the chords, etc. But it's a combination of certain things that were written out. It was obvious when a riff needed to be followed. And then those moments where you can kind of stretch out and come up with your own ideas. you know, we had free rein to do really what we felt, particularly as well with the drums. I think Rick was really keen for Ash to just be as inventive as he could be. So he would send the tracks to Ash. And I think by and large, he just said, just play what you think. And so Ash then came up with the most extraordinary parts and some of this stuff. Which then I get it and I think, oh man, this is amazing. You know, I'm gonna follow Ash on that bit, and I'm gonna follow Rick on that bit, and then I'm gonna do my own thing on that. So it's, you know, it sounds like absolute chaos, but it's not. You know, you kind of when you know you get a good bunch of players and they're all creative with good ideas, and hopefully. Other people sort of will agree, but I think it's come out great. I really do.
The last time that you were here on the YMP, you said that you heard some of the now shelved ARW music. Now, do you know if any of that material made its way onto this record?
No, I think, I don't think any of that music has made it onto the record. I think Rick would want to leave that for the project of ARW because, you know, who knows what could happen in the future, whether they'll sort of do something else. I don't know the answer to whether they will, but Rick would definitely want to be writing something completely new. And because, you know, you can muddy the waters and then suddenly you've got to maybe then talk to the other guys and say, look, you know, well, I wrote this bit, can I sort of have... So Rick would rather just kind of go, right, I'm doing a new album, this is a new project, here's some new music. And then that music is still there for ARW if they ever got back together and sort of decided to do something. There's still, you know, a starting of a project that's already there. So the Red Planet is all new stuff.
Yeah. And just last thing on ARW, how do you feel personally about the seeming discontinuation of ARW?
Well, you know, I think I have to say I had an absolute ball when I was doing it. I loved every second of it.
Yeah.
I think... It's tricky because you've got two guys that live in America and one guy that lives in the UK. And then if you include me and Lou, so you've got three guys in America and two guys in the UK. And so, you know, getting something like that together isn't always as easy as it could be. Trevor Rabin, of course, you know, he's just one of the most successful writers of film music in America, so he's always got other things going. When I spoke to Trevor last, which was sometime sort of late last year, I've had a few emails from him, but he was conducting his own music. I think it was at the Hollywood Bowl with the LA Philharmonic. Yeah. Now, you know, this guy, it's not like he's sitting around sort of waiting. Oh, I wish something would happen with ARW. You know, the guys, he's absolutely... just so into, you know, music and writing and conducting and all things, as is Rick, as is John. So it's hard to always get three people, five people in a room at the same time. I think we did really well for the two years that we did. What I feel about it is just I feel really happy and privileged to have stood on a stage with those guys and stood playing the lines of, you know, my absolute favourite bass player. You know, so I feel delighted by it all. Whether it will happen in the future, I don't know. But if it does and they ask me, I will absolutely, I'll be running into that rehearsal room saying, yep, where do I plug in?
Absolutely.
Awesome. with that said about the future, now that Rick has returned to a more progressive style, at least for now, do you think that there's a chance that the next album will continue down this path, but maybe with some vocals?
It's possible. I mean, you know, again, because Rick has so many different irons in the fire in terms of the music that he likes and also projects that he's getting on with, it's hard to kind of say what he's going to come up with next because he does have so many interests in other areas. I mean, he may have enjoyed this so much that he might think, I'm going to do another one. Or he might think to himself, okay, so instrumental is great, but I've written all these songs, I want to get these down. So I've no idea what Rick will do in terms of another album next, but I mean, he may, because he's had incredible success with these piano albums, you know, really has. So he may then think to himself, oh, great, well, that's kind of scratched that particular prog itch for the next couple of years. So I'm going to go back to piano. And because when he does those solo piano shows, he can just be by himself with a piano. And it's very easy for him to go and do that.
Yeah.
So I just, you know what, you can never second guess Rick. He's always got like a new idea that he's you know, got on a boiler somewhere. So I don't know. I hope he does another prog album though, because I want to play on it.
Absolutely. But speaking about the future for you though, just before we close.
There's a future for me. Oh great.
I'm sure there must be. There must be.
There's no future for live music at the moment. But,
no, there isn't.
Hopefully that will change toward the end of the year.
Yeah, well, that was what I was going to ask you. Is this Rick Wakeman album one that could be done live, and would you like to do it live?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were plans potentially for... In fact, we had some shows lined up around end of March, April and May, which were not going to be Red Planet shows, but they were kind of going to be prog shows. So he's kind of progressive, Six Wives, etc. But also with a view to then taking Red Planet out and touring it as well. And he's already had a few offers sort of come in. So, yeah, I mean, it's perfectly doable. A four-piece band, we can all play those instruments. I mean, you know, Rick might add another keyboard player. He may as well add his son Adam or someone to sort of come, which I'd love, because Adam's a great mate of mine, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the plan was to, at some point, do some shows, which I would have loved. And I know Dave Colquhoun would have loved, and Ash was up for it too. So I think, you know, at some point, when things start to get back to normal, I think there'll be some shows with Rick.
Fabulous. Well, thank you very much indeed. It's great to have you back on the show, and I do look forward to you coming back again, perhaps when we've had a chance to listen to the whole of the album.
Yeah.
And it would be fantastic to speak to Rick about it as well. Let's see if we can make that happen. But for now, thank you very much indeed, Lee.
Chaps, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's always good to speak to you both, and I hope you take care and, you know, stay safe, stay well.